This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. Off the Shelf gives a voice to commercial service and product companies selling in the federal market. Roger speaks to members and government officials about procurement policy trends, innovations, and debates. Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now, your host, Roger Waldron.
Today, my guest on Off the Shelf is Carolyn Alston. Carolyn is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Carolyn has a long, storied career in GSA procurement. Worked at GSA for close to three decades. I don't want to overshoot that, Carolyn. And also worked on the outside, you know, looking in at GSA. And today, we're going to talk a little bit about her experiences, give some of the history of the schedules program, and talk about current policy there and what's going on. So, Carolyn, thanks for joining me today.
Thank you. I'm very glad to be here.
Carolyn, can you just give us talk a little bit about your experiences in government and, you know, how long you were there and what you did?
Okay. Yes, I can. I was, as you with GSA, I said, for many years. Actually, I kind of grew up professionally in GSA. Started there right at the law school, and I was able to work in the legal department. I worked in buying offices. I was at various points competition advocate, and I was one of the highlights of my career for my professional development was in working as head of the project looking at MAS pricing policy and developing what is now basically the current MAS pricing policy for the for GSA.
Oh, you're the one who did that, huh, Kelly?
I take all the credit and all the blame.
Yeah. I think you're being a bit modest there, Carolyn, in terms of what you did at, you know, you rose to the highest level senior executive at GSA and were responsible for managing the GSA schedules program for a number of years. And I guess, you know, looking back on that career, can you talk a little bit about what did the schedules look like in 1999?
Wow. 1999, it's probably...
I mean, excuse me, I want to go back even further. Sorry about that. How about 1990?
Okay, memory...
Or even... Oh, no, let's go back even further. 1989.
Okay, this is really a test. I have to say that when I left GSA, I was responsible for not only the schedules program, but also all commercial acquisition programs that were non-public building service. They were all a part of the same organization at the time. So there's been a big change in the structure of GSA that it wasn't purely schedules. It was schedules and all different types of contracts that dealt with commercial item acquisition. But the schedules in particular were a much smaller program. I mean, at one point, schedules, even when schedules started to grow, it was dropped probably down about $5 billion. Now, with the combination of GSA and VA schedules, that number is up to about $50 billion. So it was a considerably smaller program. Although it was small, it still had a very broad reach because the program covered all types of commercial products, all types of commercial products. I think probably one of the biggest boosts to schedule sales was when services were incorporated into the program.
And what year was that? It was about...
Services came into the program, I would gather, in the probably the mid-90s. They've started to grow. And it started with IT services. And now, as you know, it has expanded into all types of professional services. some of the same issues were still around, but kind of with a different twist. I remember the price reduction clause. We often spoke of the inability of contractors to offer price reductions, because at that time, if you gave a price reduction to one agency, you had to give it to all agencies. And that, of course, put a was a real disincentive to anyone to offer a price reduction. Now, I think one of the most dynamic features of the program is spot pricing. So that for agencies that have live specific requirements, contractors are in a position to offer those price reductions to leverage the government's volume.
Yeah, I think that, you know, as I recall, one of the things there was that, you know, GSA was criticized at the time back in the, you know, 1989-90 timeframe and into the middle of the decade, the 90s, because the pricing was static. It didn't move. It you know, just stayed where it was, and people couldn't get lower prices off the schedule prices because no contractor would be willing to offer that, because that would become the price on their contract for the next 10 years or so.
Yes.
But what other, you know, so when they changed that, what else did they change with regard to the program? Mandatory to non-mandatory?
Yeah, the change in mandatory to non-mandatory, I think, was a huge change in the program. You know, it's funny, because at one point I had to explain to people who were totally outside of the acquisition system, you know, why when the program became non-mandatory is when sales increased, which is a little counterintuitive, because you think if a program is mandatory, that's when everybody would come. But I think the non-mandatory program changed GSA's outlook on how it handled its program, as well as the agency's outlook on whether they wanted to use it. The non-mandatory put a real competitive type of thinking into GSA's management processes, because if you couldn't attract agencies to the program, you wouldn't be able to continue to sustain the program financially. So I think management got very creative at that point about reaching out to customers, understanding what customers were looking for from the program, reaching out to industry to make sure that industry practice, to the extent possible, was incorporated into the program in order to make it sustainable. And it created a more attractive program to federal customers.
Right. And I go back to what you mentioned earlier, the idea that the ability to offer spot pricing or price reductions. Mm-hmm. So in a sense, what the program added, which seemed to be a hugely popular feature, right, is that second level competition amongst the contractors, whereas previously there wasn't really that level of competition. The contract price was the contract price across the board. Whereas, you know, the ability to ask for price reductions and ask multiple contractors mm-hmm. for price reductions or quotes, I mean, it seems to me that was a pretty key aspect of it as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think if you fast forward to the present, from the past to where we are right now, that in many conversations about MAS pricing, I hear people say that they question whether the prices are good under the multiple award schedule. And I can tell you, both from sitting on the government side and on the contractor side, that there is a very rigorous price negotiation on the GSA schedule. I think what is left out of the conversation sometimes is that second level pricing, because you have a ceiling price, for lack of a better term, on the GSA contract itself, but there's a tremendous opportunity for agencies to negotiate lower prices at that second task order level. And not only for agencies to negotiate for it, I think that sometimes, a lot of times, that contractors, when they're going after the business and they know specifically what the agencies are looking for, are in a better position to lower the price at the task order level. And I think sometimes that's left out of the consideration of our schedule prices good or not good, given the government's volume.
Right. And, you know, Carolyn, I want to touch on that a little bit more, but right now we do have to take a break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Carolyn Alston, Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And we're talking GSA schedules policy. And we'll talk some more about that second level competition when we come back. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are talking to Carolyn Alston. Carolyn Alston is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. She works with me at the Coalition. And we've been talking about GSA schedule pricing policy a little bit. We'll touch on some more of that later. But when we took our last break, Carolyn, we were talking about that second level pricing. Mm-hmm. And the fact that you made a great point that it's about ceiling pricing, and that today, in today's world, you are talking about having those second level, indeed they're mandated by regulation, by statute, that you have to have that competition for orders over $150,000. And to me, that's one of the things, I wonder what you thought of it, that you get these comparisons, or saying schedule prices, you know, are too high, which you talked a little bit about, but really in all IDIQ contracts, that price at the contract level is a starting point. Is that a fair observation?
Yeah, I think that is a fair observation. And when you have to look at what drives price. And at the contract level, there are so many things that are unknown. I mean, you know about the contractor's pricing policies and practices generally. Generally that the government is a large buyer, and you know generally that the government is going to pay sooner or later.
Right.
So you know those.
You hope sooner, but.
Right. You know those things, and those things can drive your price to a certain level. They drive it down from what you would be paying as an individual buyer. Okay, but then if you want to drive prices lower than that, what my old clients have told me and what the members of the coalition have reported as their experience is that they give the best pricing when they know specific requirements and are able to offer, in response to those specific requirements, some commercial solutions. That's where prices get driven down. And I think that's true on the schedules. I think that's true on all MAC IDIQ contracts.
Right. And I guess that goes, when you talk about it, it's really requirements drive pricing. And to the extent you're comparing across contract vehicles, you really have to get to that order level and with their price actually paid by the government to do a valid comparison, mm-hmm. right? And yeah. And then I think, and you tell me what you think, but then I think it's really hard to do that in any event, because it is very requirement specific, right? One IT requirement over here under IT Schedule 70 is different than different, but the same for an IT services requirement under another contract vehicle. Or, for example, the GWACs, you could be using an Alliant or maybe Oasis, mm-hmm. when it gets in place. They're all very requirements specific, and it's trying to create that framework to meet those requirements.
Yeah, I think they're requirement specific, and I also believe that the information that you need to evaluate the deal is probably at the agency level. You know, it's good. I mean, people can make very sweeping generalizations about the government and what the government buys, And the government has a ton of information in its possession already about its bias, but it's not always easily retrieved. And I think more and more government is trying to push those information collection burdens onto the contractors themselves, which I'm not a big fan of, because I think that just drives up the cost of the contractor, which is then passed along to the government. In my experience, the best ways for the government to drive its price, is improve its acquisitions, is at the order stage. The schedules program provides a great vehicle for agencies to do that, because they have the government wide price, and they have the ability through the use of BPAs to communicate their requirements and effectively negotiate pricing for the agency where the requirements and the information is known.
BPAs, Carolyn. You mentioned BPAs, and I guess that's a great topic. You segued for me. and I know one of the things that you have done at my request, actually, and looked at was coming up with the statement of BPA best practices. Could you talk a little bit about that?
Oh, yeah, sure.
That's a BPA best practices paper that we have up on our website at the Coalition and on our Far and Beyond blog that provides a set of good rules for the road.
Yes, absolutely. And I think, Roger, you had wanted the Coalition to develop these best practices to share information that that the members have collectively experienced with BPAs, because it's a great tool when it's used well. Now, there are a lot of BPAs that have been coming out, but some of them give you no more information than the GSA schedule, than was available at the GSA schedule level. And if you don't get any better information out there, there's no reason to really expect better pricing. So we did put up the BPA best practices, and I think one of the first practices is to have specific known requirements, and then also to be able to set up ways to communicate those requirements. Because what ideally you would like to see is a relationship that's based on business relationships, knowing what your contract partners have available, the partners knowing what the government has available.
And getting back to that issue of requirements and known requirements and specific requirements, I mean, that, you know, one of the things I got out of your best practices is there's got to be an economic incentive.
Absolutely.
For contractors to compete and offer lower prices. And without that, or some kind of guaranteed minimum would be, in my mind, okay on a BPA. Without that, you're really, you know, just putting in another form in place.
Absolutely. You have to have known requirements and commitment, you know, to buy those requirements. Because how many times have any of us seen huge estimates on contracts? And when you look at what actually came through those contracts, it's not a whole lot compared to what was expected by the contractors at the beginning. So one thing that we'd like to see is either commitment can come in a different, in a number of different ways. You can actually have the guaranteed minimum that you mentioned. I think that's probably ideal. The other thing you can have is at least a set of users that you know are going to use that as their primary vehicle.
Yeah, and that's more than just listing a bunch of agencies and estimates. It's like having some sort of actual firm commitment in the BPA saying, we will use this vehicle, and potentially even some sample tasks or work from them as part of that as well. You know, because often you do see number of agencies listed, but again, that's purely an estimate. That's no commitment to use.
Right. And, you know, and it still all circles back to requirements, because I think agencies are more committed to using it if they've had an active part in the requirements development and it actually satisfies their needs.
Right. And just to pick up on this a little bit more, I think one of the things you had also talked about is, you know, sort of you're going to this issue of generic BPAs. Mm-hmm. And I would take it a step further. It seems to me that in some cases, especially for services, putting in these sort of government-wide BPAs that are under the Federal Strategic Sourcing Initiative strike me as something that it is sort of putting form over substance. I'd be curious your thoughts on it.
I've looked at several of them, and the setting up a process doesn't necessarily provide the economic incentive that we've been talking about to drive prices. As a matter of fact, setting up the process can, in some cases, just add cost.
Or reduce competition.
Yeah, and reduce competition. So if you're looking for a contractor to leverage the volume to give the best value, setting up additional processes and costs without any economic incentive is not going to get the government where it wants to go, and quite honestly frustrates the contractors who are bidding on the
right.
Who are submitting
well, you know
proposals.
What? Right now we have a process. We have our next commercial break. So when right now we do have to take a break, but when we return, we'll be talking more with Carolyn Alston, Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, and we'll be talking a little bit more about BPAs and talk some other and talk about GSA's pricing policy and where it's headed. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
In the ever-changing national security and IT environments, L3 delivers innovative, cost-effective solutions. As a Fortune 200 company, L3 offers customers global end-to-end services and solutions for large-scale systems. No matter the challenge, L3 has the agility, technology, and innovation required for mission performance. From cybersecurity to next-generation IT, L3's passion for its customers' missions drives its commitment to excellence. L3. Agility, innovation, performance.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we're talking to Carolyn Alston, Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And Carolyn, when we took a break, we were talking about BPAs. And one thing I wanted to ask you about is, what is vertical, in the schedules context, what is vertical contract duplication? And why is it not a good thing? Two questions.
Okay, I guess maybe another way of asking the question is, how many competitions does it take to get a good price?
Very good. I like that. I can remember that one.
Okay, so we start off in let's talk just in the multiple award schedule context, but I think it's also in any MAC contract. We start off with the contract level price. Okay.
Right.
All right. Then some agencies and it's apparent in these in government-wide BPAs. The government might put into place multiple government-wide BPAs.
Okay, I'm following you.
The problem is there's still not a specific requirements definition because the BPA is so broad that it's really hard to hone in on a specific set of requirements. So then you have to go to another level, and that's the task order level, where you're probably now you're at the agency level, the entity that actually has the requirements and maybe even samples of what they want to get done. So in that case, in a government-wide BPA, you've had the GSA's contract, you've had your multiple-wide BPA, and then you get to the task order. So I guess the question is, are there any steps in there that you could avoid? And I would say that multiple government-wide BPA is a step that you could avoid. It's a step that probably adds process and cost, but you question the value.
Right. I got this question the other day. It's like, what are we doing that doesn't add value, that increases contractors' costs? And this isn't a good example of it, and you laid it out really nicely. Mm-hmm. The B&P costs first to get your scheduled contract and provide that pricing, and then you have to compete for the multiple award BPAs, whether it's government-wide or individual agency, let's say, but that's just government-wide BPAs, because there's no specific requirements or commitment to use, and you companies expected to compete and bid and proposal costs for that. But ultimately, the requirements at the task order level, and it's a customer agency bringing their statement of work and competing amongst the BPA holders, and the companies then have to also spend another set of bid and proposal costs to try to compete and win that BPA. And their real price that's government paid is at that BPA level. I mean, that price, which is built on the schedule pricing fundamentally. So it is a step to me that that can be counterproductive. There are instances where it may be okay, unhelpful, but it really is about, it seems to me that we've got to a point where process or form in process, you know, sort of is trumping substance and requirements.
Yeah, I think that there has to be a real analysis of the particular service or product. I think the problem is more in the services area and with this, with the vertical contracting than it is with the product. But we want platforms that are usable across different products and services, but we don't want it to be cookie cutter. So because a government-wide BPA worked for a particular product, we don't want to necessarily assume that that same type of format is going to work when you start getting into complex services.
Right. Thanks. I think it's, I think we beat BPAs. No, we like BPAs, but there's just some issues there.
I actually love BPAs as a way of harnessing the government's volume and communicating requirements. I just think that they have to be used in the appropriate way.
I think it sounds to me what you're saying is that they've sort of, over the years since they first came into being, like, let's, I think in about in the mid-90s, like you meant, when the services came into the schedules, BPAs did as well, that sort of the use of them has evolved, and it's not, it's not old school, as we say, right? Right? Old school procurement, right?
Right.
I mean, and we're, you and I think we'll start a movement towards back to old school procurement. but speaking of not necessarily old school, but other areas that have been around for a long time, it's the GSA pricing policies for the schedules program. And one of the things you're doing at the coalition is you're leading, you know, a pricing working group that's going to be working on a white paper. White paper that is being developed in response to sort of GSA's, you know, request that we take a look at it and provide some feedback on that pricing policy. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah, sure. The last time, well, no, GSA has looked at the multiple award schedule pricing several times, but I think their last rewrite was when I was there and back in the late 80s, early 90s. GSA has looked at the MAS pricing again in connection with the rewrite of their General Services Acquisition Regulations. They rewrote the GSAR for a number of different purposes, but the chapter on multiple award schedule pricing never did issue. It went to OMB as a final rule, but it has not been approved. So we're anticipating that we'll probably see that rule again as a proposal. And what the coalition is doing is that, in anticipation of that, looking at the pricing policies from the member perspective and seeing if there are ways that current obstacles to negotiation can be removed, and whether or not there are ways that we can suggest that the policy be improved.
Right. I'm sorry, go ahead.
I do have to say the policy has kind of stood the test of time for at least 20 years or so, but so many things have changed during that time frame, both in terms of government and the government regulations concerning ordering against the MAS policy, industry, technology, the internet. You know, I think it's a good time to look at it again.
Right. And we're talking here about trying to, you know, we're not looking to, you know, in a certain sense, you know, wipe away the government's ability to negotiate a fair and reasonable price. We're trying to look at ways that better reflect commercial practice. I think that's fair to say. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it seems to me the biggest issue there, and I just get your thoughts on it, is that the schedules now, under the schedules program, I think it's close to 2/3 of the dollar volume going through the program, or maybe even higher, mm-hmm. are service requirements. And we're mm-hmm. talking about a rule, on the other hand, that dates back to 1982, and, you know, any schedules program that was the vast majority of it, you know, well over 3/4 of it, were products. Mm-hmm. So you have a rule that's sort of written around products and what was commercial practice frankly, you know, 30 years ago, in many cases, with a current schedules program that has brought in all that technology, internet pricing and all that sort of thing, and also is very service orientated.
Yeah, you know, the MAS is much like the rest of acquisition in that regard, that I think the whole FAR grew up around products. And when you look at over time, that started to change as different rules have come out. But basically, acquisition was product-based, and the multiple or schedule is no different than the rest of acquisition in that regard. I have to say, before I forget, that GSA has been very open in talking to industry about the MAS pricing policy. And I think one of the reasons that the coalition even started to look into this area was the outgrowth of interaction with GSA, where they actually invited the industry to give them feedback. So I think
and consistent with Dan Gordon's Mythbusters campaign, that's exactly a good idea. If we we can sort of work together to figure out a better, more efficient, and more effective way to negotiate pricing, you know, reflecting the 2012 commercial world as opposed to the 1982 commercial world, I think that'd be a great thing.
Yeah.
You know, Carolyn, right now we do have to, speaking about commercial, we do have to take our last break. But when we return, we'll be talking more with Carolyn Alston. Carolyn is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And we'll talk a little bit more about the Pricing Working Group and where it's headed. You're listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Welcome back to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we're talking to the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement, Carolyn Alston. And Carolyn, when we took our last break, we were talking about the Pricing Working Group and pricing policies, and we hadn't really gotten to the details of what we're looking at. Can you talk a little bit about some of the areas that the working group's going to look at?
Yeah, I think one of the things that the working group is going to look at are it will be the impact of changes to the MAS ordering procedures on MAS pricing. You know, right now, pricing, the concept of the MAS is that pricing is driven by the most favored customer pricing policy. With the new ordering procedures, there's greater transparency and competition at the order stage. So I think one of the things we'll look at is whether that transparency and competition should change the MAS, the most favored customer pricing goal, whether that should be reasonable pricing as opposed to most favored customer. I know that's a huge issue for GSA, but I think it's a valid one for us to look at.
I think it's, I guess my reaction, it is fair to look at it in the context of, you know, there are, you know, even the current policy, right, says it's most favored customer pricing in similar circumstances, or you're supposed to be able to consider the terms and conditions of the commercial transaction with the terms and conditions of the schedules. And frankly, you know, by law, essentially a term and condition of the schedules contract is this requirement for competition at the order level for orders over $150,000. So I think it's a fair area to take a look at and try to figure out what makes sense for, you know, government and industry.
Exactly. And I, you know, even if we look at the, we could look at the basic underlying policies, but there are also some procedures that might be impacted or changed based on the changes in the ordering procedure. You know, you couldn't look at multiple word schedule pricing unless you look at the price reduction clause too.
Right. And that's that's an interesting one. What are your thoughts there?
Well, my thoughts are that, like MFC, the price reduction is a clause that's there to capture changes in the spot market. Again, with greater competition, requirement to compete at the order stage, the question has got to be, has the price reduction outlived its usefulness? And not only its usefulness, but there's a lot of liability associated with the price reduction clause. And I think we would be looking at whether you could decrease the cost to contractors and therefore the price to agencies by eliminating some of that liability.
Right. Risk plays a role in pricing for contractors, and to the extent you can address that risk, because you have a competitive requirements for the orders, that changes the balance in the contracts. Mm-hmm. Another thing it seems to me is that, you know, the growth of services under the schedules, as we talked about earlier in the show, it's very requirements driven. You know, statements of work, specific requirements, specific technical solutions that are priced. I think that's one of the drivers in the past. Mm-hmm. I think the MAS panel that did a report on this pricing issues actually looked at some of that. That idea that the unique pricing for a specific requirement, you know, under an order competition, again, changes the dynamic of how do you actually compare and, in a certain sense, penalize a contractor because they have a unique requirement over here for a commercial customer and they gave a lower price.
Yeah. Yeah, we will certainly look at that, because you can't, as we've said before, services are the biggest part of the schedules now. And there have been solutions that range all the way from no pricing at the schedule contract level and leave pricing totally to the task order level. There have been solutions that involve internet-type pricing, gathering information just strictly from out there, what's in the commercial market to pricing, all the way to the other extreme of cost-reimbursable contract pricing. So I think that whole gamut of solutions we'll be looking at. And we have so many issues to look at that I think that part of the biggest part of the working group is going to be focusing down to a specific set of manageable issues that we can look at and order and offer some solutions to GSA in a reasonable time.
Yeah, I'll give you a chance today before we move on off to a different topic real quick. But is there any, you mentioned those two areas. Is there any other specific area the group would look at that you think would be a priority along with those other two?
I think the priority is going to be the disclosure requirements under the multiple word schedule. There, as you know, there are a number of different forms that request data collection. I think we would definitely like to look at those.
Okay.
And we want to make sure that we are offering commercial best practices. And one of the things that I know the coalition has been interested in is to fully leveraging the commercial market without establishing unique requirements.
Yeah, that's sort of, again, the idea of putting commercial back in commercial item contracting, mm-hmm. and reducing unique requirements that increase cost to the government that don't really add any value to the government. I think that's, again, a theme that we're going to be focusing on. And I thought, we're getting close to the end. I've got a couple minutes left, Carolyn, and I think I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you a little bit about, GSA is looking at a demand-based model for the schedules program where they may decide to close some schedules. Right now there is one schedule closed. I think it's schedule 75 office mm-hmm. products that is closed. And the idea is, I guess, is to try to rebalance the workload. I think some of the things we're talking about would go a long way towards rebalancing the workload. But I'd like to get any of your thoughts on what GSA is looking at right now.
I think there's huge value to keeping schedules open, because the whole concept of the multiple award schedule is that there are many offerings to satisfy the varying requirements of government. And you never know when even a schedule that has many, many contractors on it may not have that one new solution that's going to satisfy a critical government need. So if I had my wish of how GSA would look at these, I would look first at their procurement procedures and practices. I think there is a huge opportunity to streamline those practices so that there's a better use of their acquisition workforce without closing schedules. I also think that closing schedules has a big impact on small businesses. You know, the big guys tend to be there already. It is a small, niche, innovative, flexible small businesses that are out there and that might be shut out of the program if they use that demand-based model.
Right. And but the flip side of it is, too, is that you would be closing off opportunity. Mm-hmm. But if there are companies, you know, and they have requirements in the contracts that if you don't reach, I think it's $25,000 in sales over 2 years, they can cancel your contract. Right. Or if you don't, you know, and then if you don't maintain that, if you do reach it on an annual basis, that makes sense to me, because that's a point where maybe it doesn't make good business sense for that company who doesn't reach that sales threshold to be on schedule, or they're not investing in competing on those contracts or whatever. They need to take a step back and look at it and, you know, and potentially, you know, leave the program. Right. That makes more sense than closing opportunity.
Right. And even there for canceling contracts, I think that's something that should be done at the renewal period and not right during the contract period, because the process of getting contractors off in and of itself is a workload.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. And we didn't even get to talk about other direct costs and fixing that.
So, favorite topics.
Yeah, but we'll do that next time, Carolyn. Yeah. So I want to thank Carolyn Alston. Carolyn is the Executive Vice President and General Counsel for the Coalition for Government Procurement. And you've been listening to Off the Shelf on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.
You've been listening to Off the Shelf with Roger Waldron of the Coalition for Government Procurement. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Off the Shelf, Tuesday mornings at 10:30, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM.